Chapter 14. Dwarves' starchy standards of decency and their belief that baths are best saved for special occasions prevent them from disrobing often. Even in those rare moments when a dwarf is nude, however, he usually carries an axe or small hammer with him, just in case. So when the orcs took Gorm's axe, with grinned assurances that he wouldn't be needing it anymore, he felt more vulnerable and exposed than he had in his entire life. They were separated and marched in single file down the road. The orcs hounded them constantly, boasting about the deadly nature of the various weapons they carried, or hewing tree stumps and rotting logs in two to prove their worth. They walked for the entire morning and past lunchtime. Gorm's mind raced as he and his handlers plodded along, but his handlers left no chance for escape. There was no sign of Thane swooping in to save them either. The troll seemed to have vanished into the night. Some good the deal had done him. Gorm had half a mind to tell Caitha the whole story of the troll as soon as they made it out of this. If they made it out of this. The fortress that was Bloodroot sat just off the road, like a great beast lurking in the tall grass. A ring of sharpened pine trunks formed its walls, divided by four watchtowers, and split by a massive, well-guarded gate. Beyond the wall, a sprawling assortment of mud and wood huts spilled onto the landscape. Orcs hustled and hollered through the dirt streets, carrying baskets of food, dragging racks of weapons and armor, herding disagreeable-looking pigs around, and baring their teeth at the heroes as they paraded down Bloodroot's thoroughfare. Deep chanting reverberated through the village, rising and falling with the rhythm of a distant drum. Gorm had been through orcish settlements before, though he had always been pillaging or torching them at the time. There was something different about Bloodroot. Orcs and orcuses alike moved with industrious purpose. They manned long stone factories that belched violet smoke into the air. Some smithed and wove and butchered in shops and shacks along the streets, but others carried briefcases and folios to and from some meeting or another. Gorm saw one orc before a gathering of blacksmiths and tanners, pointing to a graph painted in crude slashes on an animal hide. The orcs also tended kennels full of huge wargs. The great wolves barked and slavered as they beat themselves against the wooden posts of their pens.
"Don't worry,"
Char told the wargs as the heroes marched past them. He shot Gorm a fanged smile.
"You'll have a turn with them after the chief."
At the center of Bloodroot, they reached a squat, round tower draped in crimson and emerald banners, decorated with crude skulls, axes, and wolves. Guards nodded to Char as he and a select few of his retinue led the heroes up the steps inside the tower. The hall at the top of the tower smelled of pine and musk. Animal furs and vivid tapestries hung from the walls. Strings of hanging beads shaded windows that overlooked Bloodroot in all directions. Opposite the top of the tower steps sat a great throne of ivory and stone, flanked by a motley assembly of orcish guards and dignitaries. Atop the throne sat the largest orc that Gorm had ever seen, more like a lime-skinned war elephant than a man. He had tusks like daggers. He wore a set of banded mail armor studded with a small armory's worth of blades and spikes. He shifted on his throne as the heroes were assembled before him and rattled the myriad beads and teeth that dangled from his chin strap, which hung down to his waist. When he spoke, he did so in a voice like distant thunder, low and promising coming fury.
"I am Zerthraka Daz Gazvarda, chief of the Gazvarda tribe and ruler of Bloodroot," he announced. "See? You are honored by my presence."
"Don't let them see weakness," Jin muttered to Gorm. "They go for the throat when they sense weakness."
"Are you not pleased?" rumbled the great orc. "Perhaps I shall honor you with my axe instead."
"Give me my old axe and I'll honor you with a few new orifices," snarled Gorm. "Just say what you want with us."
The assembled orcs collectively gasped. Several rattled their weapons and muttered darkly. Looking unhappy, Zerthraka turned to consult with a thin specimen in long violet robes.
"What do we do now?" Haraldin asked.
"Keep your heads about you."
"That is the goal, yes," said the bard, eyeing a guard with a wickedly bladed halberd.
"Perhaps they would be willing to parley," said Caitha.
"Just don't say anything,"
hissed Gorm.
You may want to tell that to your goblin, said Laruna.
You go wrong, Zagpuma! Bend the Pogti, the Augur root ready!
What? Gleebek! Gleebek, get back here!
But by the time Gorm saw Gleebek, it was too late. The tiny goblin was marching across the floor, the eyes of the assembled orcs trained upon him. Why do they scowl so, Dengark? Zerthraka asked his wise one. I know not, Lord, said Dengark the Venerable. The wise one stroked his luxuriant white mustache, the longest in Bloodroot, as he pondered. Perhaps the weapons should be sharper? Sharper, said Zerthraka. How could such a weapon be? We have sharpened them as the gods must sharpen their own blades. They would cut through the earth when set on the ground if we sharpened them more. It couldn't possibly be the weapons, nor could it be the assembly. The chief had brought all of his family, his most trusted advisors, even his high council, to stand beside him. He'd even offered his axe to the Son of Fire. How could he further honor their guests? Yet the assembled lightlings scowled and muttered as if asked to muck the pigsties. The dwarf was making threats. What is our next step, Lord? Dengark asked. I was about to ask my wise one exactly that, said Zerthraka. A thousand pardons, great chieftain, interrupted a small voice. A goblin in a white tunic stepped from the ranks of heroes. Honor me with the chance to speak in your presence.
Hello,
cried the dwarf.
Hello, get back here!
You speak out of turn and upset your comrades, said Zerthraka. Why should I honor you so? The goblin tapped his fist to his chest in salute. Hello, Chief Zerthraka. I am Tibrin, once of the River Turtle Clan. I fear that your problems with the Lightlings are rooted in misunderstanding, as so often happens.
Gleebek, what are you saying to them?
Gleebek, said the dwarf. Zerthraka considered the goblin. Why does the Son of Fire keep calling you hello? Alas, great chief, as I said before, misunderstandings are common between us and the Lightlings. Ha! Zerthraka grinned. That they are, Tibrin River Turtle. Very well. I honor you by hearing. First, tell me how it is that you travel among the Pinkskins. The Son of Fire is called Gurm Ingerzon, Lord. He is a goldhound that saved me from a goldhound and got me my life papers. Now I am honored to be his blade steward. Whispers ran through the assembly as Zerthraka turned to the dwarf.
Gorm Ingerzon?
Aye, what of it? Said the dwarf.
Was it you who struck an elven guard for offending this goblin?
The question seemed to greatly agitate the dwarf, who began to curse in the tongue of the old empire. He has saved me many times, said Tibrin, looking fondly at the dwarf, but he is loath to boast. Very loath indeed, said Zerthraka, watching Gorm tug on his beard and swear. But tell me, Tibrin, how have I offended the honor of these mercenary dogs? I have made every effort to please them. See, I sent them my own son to assist with their satisfaction. Indeed, Lord Father, said Char, stepping forward, and I have followed the way of aggressive sails just as you have commanded. And how did you open? Zerthraka asked him. I showed them our fine assortments of weapons for sale. A thousand pardons, said the goblin, but it could also be said that you waved your axes at the Lightlings and took their own weapons from them. I contrasted our product and disparaged the competition, said Char. It is the way of the aggressive seller. And then we were commanded to follow you, continued the goblin. I would not take no for an answer. Char was becoming agitated. And we were separated from each other. You were given service at a personal level. Then we were paraded through town. I showed off our impressive facilities and shopping centers. Wait a moment, said Zerthraka, pointing to the goblin. Do you suggest that our guests felt too much sales pressure? No, Lord. I suggest that they think we are prisoners. What? Orcs and Lightlings alike stepped back as Zerthraka leaped to his feet. Impossible! Bellowed Char.
I wore green beads over orange, and my beard...
Woda Nuktar.
But surely, growled Zerthraka, you remembered that lightlings do not read the beads, and green over orange beads would mean nothing to them. Char faltered. I was true to the path of the aggressive seller. You failed to establish your value proposition, Zerthraka roared, shaking his mighty fists in the air. You have fallen from the way of aggressive selling. One must always announce one's purpose in the market to the potential customer. I am... Confusion turned to frustration on the warrior's face. And what if I did fail this path? I tire of this folly. Day after day, I am forced to read your pink-skin books. And for what? A chance to act as a simpering halfling for a handful of their gold. In days of honor, I would take all of their gold and keep it in a purse of their scalps. Char stared daggers at the assembly around him. Zerthraka stared broadswords back at his son. And then you would have a purse full of gold until the gold hounds came and took it from your corpse. If we follow the ways of commerce, we have our life papers to ward off the gold hounds, and we collect a handful of gold from the same lightlings again and again. It is the path of prosperity. It is the path of cowards. It is the path of my tribe, roared Zerthraka. And as long as my beard is longest, I will brook no more slight from my own wealth. Then perhaps it is time for me to grow my beard into that of a chief, shouted Char. Perhaps a return to the old days of... Zerthraka didn't give Char the chance to finish. With an angry roar, he pounced upon his son. The boy barely had time to cry out before he was knocked to the ground and pinned under his father's massive boot. I am not so far from your old days that I will not defend my throne. Do not mention your axe unless you mean to draw it, he growled, drawing his great knife. And do not draw it until you are fit to rule. I did not mean... Silence! Zerthraka grabbed a fistful of his squealing son's beard and cleft it from his chin with a few swift strokes. He threw the hair and beads on the floor next to Char as he walked back to the throne. You will go and shave your face clean. Your duty is to muck the pigs and walk the wargs until it grows back. Char managed to muster the wisdom to say nothing as he stood, head bowed. In your days of honor, your head would be decorating a pike on my ramparts, and I would have one less son, Zerthraka said, sitting. Leave, and speak no more of your foolishness. Your mercy is as endless as legends say, Dengark told him. It is tried to its very limits, Zerthraka grumbled, watching Char scurry from the room. He turned back to the goblin. You have done us a great service, Tibrin of the River Turtle. I will grant to you a boon. Think on it, and ask when you are ready. It was my honor, great lord, said Tibrin. Zerthraka nodded and turned back to the lightlings. They stood rigid with awe and uncertainty, and wore the expression of those who have escaped the frying pan and now wonder whether the cook fire has been left lit.
And now, my friends, he said, it is time to, as you say, clear things up.
As the heroes followed the chieftain down the thoroughfare, Gorm was reminded of the days when gnomish eyeglasses had been a favorite toy for all the lads in his mine. His father had given him a pair for his 8th name day, a tiny pair of handcrafted goggles with cheap leather straps. When young Gorm had put them on, the mine suddenly became a fragmented swirl of sapphire, topaz, and emerald, an entirely new world of wonder and color. In a similar way, a cordial discussion with Chief Zerthraka had let Gorm see their circumstances through a different lens, and now the heroes were walking through an entirely new bloodroot, although it was still predominantly brown and green. The bustling orcs put Gorm in mind of the industrious Scribkin villages of the Ironbreakers.
Shopkeepers smiled from every stall, silently inviting them to view their wares. The orcs sang as they worked, chanting to the beat of a musician's drums, and the song seemed familiar to Gorm in a way he couldn't describe.
"The chief tells us we have ye to thank for this," Gorm told Glebeck,
no, Tibrin, as they walked down the street.
"What?"
said the goblin. One of the orcs in Xerthraka's retinue kindly translated. When Tibrin chittered something back, the orc told Gorm,
"He says he owed you a blood debt. You saved his life."
"Do me a favor and tell him we're even," said Gorm.
The wargs were loosed when the heroes passed their cages. The massive wolves ran barking and baying from their pens, only to flop down in front of the heroes and refuse to move until their bellies had been sufficiently scratched. Given the quantity of wargs in the pack and the impressive size of an average warg belly, it took the heroes considerable time and effort to extricate themselves and continue on their royal tour. Xerthraka's tour continued with a walkthrough of one of several factories in Bloodroot. A sign outside identified it as a swordsmithery for the Vorpal Corp, a well-known manufacturer of exceptionally sharp blades.
"I didn't think Vorpal swords were made in a factory,"
said Laruna as the heroes and Xerthraka's retinue crammed into the factory's entryway.
"I always assumed they were crafted by that smith who's pictured on the crates they come in."
"Right, the one with the picturesque mountain village behind him," said Caitha. "Everyone wants a sword crafted by an old master."
"Marketing is its own kind of magic, is it not?"
said Xerthraka.
"An illusion that men pay to be fooled by."
He pushed the doors open and showed them a nightmare. Waves of heat and choking smog washed over the heroes. The factory was a termite mound of steel and stone, swarming with bare-chested orcs. Some worked over pools of molten slag, standing tenuously close to the edge and stirring it with long metal rods. Others stood along glowing tracks, crammed shoulder to shoulder, their hands gliding faster than sight over streams of weapon parts that bobbed down the line on currents of magic. Swords were assembled from their base components, gem and pommels, crossbars and grips. The orcs went about their work with dull eyes and blank expressions.
"Bloody ashes," whispered Gorm.
But how can this be?" Haraldin asked. "Every Vorpal sword is made with rare ingredients. They're made with the blood of a flame drake and the teeth of a diamond fang scarg." Xerthraka pointed to an emaciated figure in a suspended cage near the upper catwalks.
"They are."
Through the smog, Gorm could just make out the crimson-scaled body of a flame drake. Its breathing was slow and labored, and thick tubes were stitched through its body.
"They are forced to drink your elixir to keep them alive, but their bodies are ever harvested for the components to craft the blades," said Xerthraka. "And my tribe is not treated so much better. Daily my tribesmen lose hands and fingers to the river of blades, but they are given a potion and told to get back to work. Day in and day out, they bleed and drink the potions and bleed again."
"Are you all right?" said Laruna.
"Hm?"
said Caitha. "It almost sounded like you said that sounds nice."
"What? No! That's funny. No, I said that's not right."
"It is not right,"
agreed Xerthraka.
"It is an abomination, but it is what the Vorpal Corporation demands."
He nodded to a small group of humans and gnomes in smart suits who supervised the factory from the top of the catwalk. "So why do you do it?"
"It is better to bleed than to die, is it not? These factories give us life papers and jobs when we had no other path. Our wages let us build this city. It was a high price to pay, but now we have a foundation to build a dream."
"I suppose," said Gorm.
"Come," said Xerthraka, "I will show you a dream that is worth our blood."
He led them from the factory, through the streets, to a small alley littered with anvils and forges. Amid the orange glow of the coals, blacksmiths hammered glowing metal to the rhythm of their ancient chant. Around them, orcs carefully polished and packaged the product of the blacksmith's labors, weapons and armor, but also plowshares and farming tools, candelabras, ornate gates, and even an angular sculpture of a dancing orc.
This is the future of the Gazvarda tribe,
Zerthraka told the heroes.
My kin craft weapons and armor of the finest quality in the old ways of my people.
And they're as good as Vorpal blades? Jin sounded doubtful, and Gorm was inclined to share his skepticism. Everyone knew Vorpal made the sharpest, finest blades possible.
As good,
snorted Zerthraka.
They're better. Corporations like Vorpal or Plus Five know nothing of the proper heft of a blade or the right curve of a crossguard. They talk only of sharpness and magical flame on the blade or the gems on the hilt. What good is a blade that shoots lightning if you cannot strike your foe with it? We shape the seal as our ancestors did, when every orc smithed his own blade, and our greatest craftsmen were our greatest warriors. Our weapons are balanced by hands that know how they should swing. Our ancestors lived and fought and died for ages of unceasing war, and we fold their knowledge, their curses, their spirit into our steel. Our blades are forged in the fires of our history. They are peerless.
The secret ingredient is bloodlust, said Heraldin.
Here,
said Zerthraka. He selected an axe from a weapons rack and handed it to Gorm.
Oh, I couldn't.
Oh. The weight of the weapon surprised Gorm. He could feel the heft of its head, but somehow it seemed easier than lifting his own. His old weapon was well balanced and sufficient, but this was perfect, an extension of his arm from the moment it dropped into his hand.
It's amazing, said Gorm, giving the axe a test swing.
It is, and what is more, it is an opportunity, said Zerthraka. Ashurzu, present the opportunity.
An orcus in harvest gold and lilac wrappings stepped forward, holding up a set of charts painted on a lambskin.
I am Ashurzu Gazvarda, second daughter and fourth child of Zerthraka Gazvarda. Our research makes clear that lightlings want handcrafted traditional goods and perceive their superior quality. If we strike now, we can establish a brand to rival the Vorpal Corp. Our product lines shall have much glory and honor, and also a premium price.
Once we have built our brand, that is, for now we sell them cheaper than a sword buy plus five, said Zerthraka.
And then, in the manner of his so-called path of the aggressive seller, he added,
How many shall I package up for you?
Gorm bought the axe. It would have been foolish not to at that price. Caitha found a hunting knife that suited her. Heraldin picked up a pair of daggers. The orcs were pleased with those sales, but they were unabashedly thrilled with Geist. The weapons master bought a small battalion's worth of concealable weapons, as well as a great two-handed sword to strap across his back. He also proved an excellent haggler. Geist placed a bag of Gilton on the table and stared straight ahead, unflinching at the exhortations and gyrations of the desperate sales orcs around him, until they finally, brokenly, scooped up his offered price and limped away. Niln alone was unhappy about the transactions, although that was entirely because he was bankrolling them.
The temple has already spent incredible amounts of money on weapons and armor for the party, he argued. Don't you think we should save some of the quest's budget for other things?
I don't understand your question, Gorm told him.
What else would we spend the money on? Asked Caitha.
Lots, said Ashurzu with a smile.
They toured several more shops offering exotic treasures. Clothiers offered them brightly colored shawls and strings of intricately carved beads. Furriers hawked coats and gloves and bedrolls made from the furs of yaks and wargs. Steaming legs of yak and ram, drizzled with spiced honey, sizzled over fire pits, and for tuppence, a wiry orc shaved several thick, juicy strips off any meat the heroes wanted. There were tools and toys, produce and pottery, cheeses and wines, a wider array of products than Gorm had imagined any orc would use, let alone create. He was still licking spiced yak from his fingers when they arrived at a small stone hut near the center of Bloodroot. From the outside, it resembled most of the huts in the town, but inside it had the musty, lovingly worn air of a shrine. Silence rang like a call to worship. Zerthraka led them through the small antechamber to rooms built of oak and pine. Treasure gleamed everywhere.
Masks and weapons hung from the walls. Gems and ceremonial relics sat atop pedestals and benches. Suits of armor and great war drums stood in the corners. Gorm recognized plundered dwarven burial masks, elven shields, and gold and jewelry from the bygone Empire of Man.
"This," said the chieftain softly, "is the Zugolabgar, the High Vault. The greatest treasures of our tribe are stored within these walls."
"What's with the pile of rocks?" asked Laruna.
"Ah," said Zerthraka, striding to a pile of crude granite stones somebody had carelessly left amid a collection of priceless artworks and heirlooms. "These are Heartseeker beads. In the days before we had our life papers, every member of the tribe carried one at all times."
"Why?" asked Caitha. The orc lifted a stone the size of a halfling's fist and carved with crude, jagged designs.
"When the heroes of the Lightlings come to make war on Shadowkin, they cannot be stopped, only delayed. If we hold out against one war band, another is behind them, and another behind that. No matter how mighty a clan is, they will fall to the Lightlings eventually. And the houses will be looted and burned, and the livestock slaughtered, and the treasures taken away, until the village is ashes and rubble. Nothing can stand. Nothing is left behind. As locusts are to wheat, so are heroes to my people. When we had no life papers, we knew that if they came, we would have but one option, to flee. And so we planned that if the heroes should come, every orc and orcus would take a Heartseeker bead. Half would stay to fight for the honor of the clan, half would take the children and flee, and one would take the Heartstone."
He held up the stone and squeezed it. A sibilant shushing rippled through the silent shrine as every bead in the great pile reoriented itself to point toward the stone clenched in Zerthraka's fist.
"And so we would find each other, led by the beads."
"It's horrible that you should live in such fear," said Niln. Zerthraka smiled.
"It is past. Now the beads remind us of the hope we held, even in the darkness. Come, I must show you something."
They passed through a second chamber of treasures and weapons, into a small back room lit by ornate paper lanterns. The walls were lined with metal masks, or perhaps helmets that completely encased the head in iron. Their faceplates were carved into jagged skulls, each lower jaw piece giving the impression of a ferocious underbite. The masks that hung from the walls were black and charred, but at the back of the room, one of the largest was pristine. White and red paint splattered over it in clear, if rough, patterns. Several smaller masks, no bigger than a hand, sat on a smaller dais behind it.
"These," said Zerthraka, "are the ghosts of my line. A ghost is the death mask of a chieftain or a champion, the last face a great warrior wants his foes to see. It is the face they will be remembered by."
"Is that what it means?" said Gorm, shooting a sidelong glance at Ghaist.
"Did you not know?" said Ashurzu with a wry smile.
"We assumed his name was part of your brand, your, as you say, image, no? To be so dark and brooding."
Ghaist casually glanced at Gorm, and then looked back to the great death masks of the orcs, without so much as uncrossing his arms.
"You said you have one of our ancestor stones. May I see it?"
Zerthraka extended a hand to Niln. The High Scribe looked uncertain, but when Gorm nodded, Niln carefully pulled the marble from its velvet pouch and handed it over.
"Berks, the third son of Ogmagerd," said Zerthraka, reverently holding the stone. "He slew the entire Dosnarad tribe for the insult they paid to his father. Truly, he was among the greatest warriors of all time."
He set the marble atop the third pedestal along the back wall.
"It is said that the elves let the original ghosts rust and rot from the stones. We made these so that the ancestors may have their true faces back,"
Zerthraka said, carefully placing the small death mask over the statue. The ghost fit perfectly, encasing the marble head in a leering iron skull.
"He is whole again,"
the chief said, reverently lifting the completed statue.
"Promise me one thing, Niln of the Almatrans.
You said that you have the power to give the stones to whomever you choose. I will leave you your decision.
Gently, Xerthraka handed the statue back to Niln, complete with its new geist.
But if you do decide to deliver them to the elves, say you will put their geists back on them first. Let the ancestors be who they chose to be, wherever they are.
I will, Niln promised. I swear it by the Allmother.
Thank you. If the Gazvarda can provide you with aid in your journey, we shall do so.
Gorm smiled. He'd been waiting for the offer.
Well, there is one thing.
Gorm, flanked by Haraldin and Geist, hurried down a dingy alley. Orcish children fought mock wars and pillaged imaginary villages throughout the dirt streets. Laundry hung between the buildings to dry, and scrawny wargs napped in dusty yards. Orcuses lounged on almost every doorstep, watching them with heavy-lidded eyes. A wiry orc in amethyst robes, Dengark the Venerable, traveled with them to act as a translator and guide.
Perhaps it would be best if we just fetched Gabrang for you, Master Dwarf. You three could join the other heroes as we prepare the Feast of Honor.
No thanks, said Gorm. I've a pretty good idea of what type of orc our friend Gabrang is, the kind who'll be half a league away if he gets word we're looking for him.
Dengark clicked his fangs and looked around uncomfortably.
Perhaps. I cannot say. I've never met him myself. But as for the company he keeps, this is not a good place. There are many Thrakgongardin.
I can't say we're familiar with the term, said Haraldin.
Ah, no, I suppose you would not be, said the orc.
What does it mean? Asked Haraldin. Dengark blushed a deep pine color.
Well, sometimes when an orc and his woman find each other suitably mighty, they go to their hut and—
Right, Gorm cut him off. Get to the point.
And when an orc isn't suitably mighty and has no lady, he goes to a Thrakgongardin with a fistful of gold and—
Gorm shook his head.
Enough said.
Haraldin looked thoughtful.
I wonder how much— Ow!
Either invest in some shin guards or learn to keep your trap shut, Gorm grumbled.
Dengark led them into a dilapidated hut. Thick smoke with the herby, umbral scent of opiates choked the cramped chambers of the hut. Semi-conscious orcs were strewn about the floor and the furniture, some taking drags from long wooden pipes and riding the fumes to the gates of oblivion. Aetherbloom was the preferred drug of the poor, being cheaper than elixir and almost as safe. When questioned, a couple of the more responsive smokers indicated that Gabrang could be found in the back room. Gorm stepped through a doorway of hanging beads into a sparse room containing a table, three chairs, and three hulking orcs who were carving doses of opium from thick brown bricks and wrapping them in wax paper. They didn't look happy to see unexpected guests.
"What do you want, lightlings?" snarled the largest.
"Looking for Gabrang," said Gorm. "Got a couple of fast questions." "Get lost before I have your beard for boot linings," said the orc. "It's just a few questions, Gabrang," said Gorm.
Gabrang glared at Gorm through narrowed eyes.
"You're the one everybody's talking about. The one who punched out an elf because he talked bad about some goblin."
"I am."
"And I'm supposed to care? I've killed point ears for less. I'm not going to fall at your feet like a lonely warg for the favors you've done a goblin." "You will watch your tongue around our honored guests," snapped Dengark, "and you will answer their questions. Or else what? Will I wind up telling everybody who's been fawning over the good and noble goblin friend how he came into my home with demands and threats of violence?"
grinned Gabrang.
"Will the orcs of Bloodroot think he's just another gold hound who is strong-arming Xerthraka into doing his bidding?"
"Can't have that," said Gorm. "I got a reputation to protect. Come on, Dengart, let's step outside."
"But I think Haraldin and Geist might have a bit more luck talking to our friend here than we will,"
Gorm told the wise one. Gabrang and his cohorts laughed.
"Oh, and who are they?"
"What, you ain't heard of them?"
"Of course not."
Gorm grinned wolfishly.
"Well, I guess they don't have much of a reputation."
Geist cracked his knuckles. The orcs blanched. Gorm and Dengark didn't even make it to the front door before Haraldin called them back, with a proclamation that Gabrang was suddenly feeling much more hospitable and talkative.
But he said he wants to speak to the dwarf alone, Heraldin added. The courtyard behind the drug den was crammed between several windowless huts. A small table amid the potted ether bloom plants afforded Gorm and Gabrang a measure of privacy. The orc slouched on his stool and shot Gorm a sullen look.
You've got my ear, Longbeard. I want to know about the Leviathan Project.
Panic flashed across Gabrang's face.
I know nothing about that.
I have it on good word that you do, or at least better word than yours.
I can't say anything about it.
Gorm leaned in.
Try. Do you know what could happen to me if anybody working on the project found out I talked?
Sweat beaded on Gabrang's brow.
Working on it?
Gorm's brow furrowed.
I thought the project ended when Johan took Datar Ermayan's head.
Gabrang wiped his forehead as he realized he'd loosed more information than intended.
I will say nothing more.
Are you working on the project?
Gorm pressed.
I will say nothing more,
Gabrang repeated forcefully.
Your bard and the psychopath can do their worst. I will not speak.
The bard and the weapons master. Did you think they're my threats? La, they ain't my leverage. They're here for your protection.
Gabrang harumphed.
Tell that to Berthak. It will take a couple of moons for his face to heal.
Aye, but it will heal. And now your wise one Dengark thinks you're speaking to me because my lads roughed you up, and not because I know you've been working as a henchman on the side. By Razar's flame.
Gabrang wore the panicked look of one who has seen his own future and discovered there was distressingly little left.
Aye,
now you see how bad a day you're actually having, said Gorm. What do you suppose the tribe would do if they found out there was a villain's minion living among them, eh? I suppose nobody outside of Bloodroot would ever hear of it, but inside the town they'd have to make an example of you, right? And if I remember my history correctly, your people have a way of making an execution memorable. I don't know much about the project itself, all right? I can go and have a talk with Dengark if you like, said Gorm. No, no.
Gabrang's shoulders fell.
Look, I used to run in a mob of orcs for Aya of Blades, back when she was working with the big Noctomancers. Datar Ermayan, Telder of Umbrix, Wind Cinder, Azanon the Black, and Lady Aya. They were all working on something huge. The other henchmen called it Project Leviathan, and they'd send us to get whatever it was the wizards needed. Usually we were hauling old statues, or Stenish charms, or other creepy bits of art, and always in crates with a weird stamp on it, like a fish with a long mustache. We'd just move the goods from one tower or dungeon to another. I don't know what they wanted it for. They don't pay us to ask questions, right? We just moved the crates.
So what's happening with it now?
Gabrang rubbed the sweat from his brow.
Somebody started the project up again. I don't know who or why, but they're paying good money for the loot that came out of the old Noctomancer's dungeons. A guy I knew got 15,000 gilton for a sword that Wind Cinder carried. 15,000! You know that statue of the Sten King, or whatever, they got up at the top of Andoran?
Gorm felt a chill run up his spine.
Aye? A chip from that statue will get you 100,000. Just a chip the size of a pebble. Nobody has figured out how to get it yet, but still, think about all that money.
Gorm was too busy thinking about the statue itself. The idea that anyone besides Niln had taken an interest in the Dark Prince was troubling.
Who's the buyer? He asked.
I don't know. It's someone with deep pockets and a desire for old art. I swear on Gathra's blade, that is all I know. Everyone just calls him the Master.
And what's your part in all of this?
Gabrang licked his lips and looked to the door before whispering,
The Master routes his treasures through Bloodroot. I help his henchmen move the shipments through. Helped. I'm done. I swear it.
Why Bloodroot?
Because it is so close to the border with Ruskin and to the Master's lair. Do not make me say more, dwarf.
You know what I need. Tell me.
Men have died for less,
protested the orc.
Where is the lair of the Master?
Demanded Gorm. Gabrang slumped back into his chair, defeated.
Just over the border in the Ashen Tower, he said. The old lair of Datar Ermayan.